Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to our May 23rd meeting. If you all rise, please, and join me in the flag salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. At this time, Madam Clerk, would you read the changes to our agenda, please?
Yes, you have a couple of changes to today's agenda. Under consent agenda, item B1, introduction of a resolution to collect delinquent service charges on property tax bills for County Service Area Number 16, Shandon Water Service, County Service Area 23, Santa Margarita Water Service, County Service Area Number 10A, Cayugas Water Service, County Service Area Number 1, Napomo, and County Service Area Number 18, San Luis Country Club. To the 2006-2007 county property tax bills, all districts. Staff is requesting this item be withdrawn and be brought back at a later date. Under amended hearing items, item C4 is a hearing to consider a resolution certifying the San Luis Obispo County Regional Airport Master Plan update and final environmental assessment and environmental impact report. All district recommendation is for approval. There's actually two corrections on this item. Staff is requesting this item be amended to include the attached pages, which were inadvertently left out of the packet and are referenced as attachment B in the resolution. The additional pages are attached for your review. Also, they are replacing pages which were added via amendment number 1 to the May 26th Board of Supervisors, 23rd Board of Supervisors agenda, and are referenced as attachment B in the resolution. The replacement pages are also attached for your review and approval. And item C5 is a hearing to consider adoption of resolutions to take final action on all the amendments tentatively approved May 9th, 16th, and 23rd, amendments to the Land Use Element South County Area Plan, Title 19 Building and Construction Ordinance, Title 22 Land Use Ordinance, and Title 26 Growth Management Ordinance. This is a summer general plan amendment cycle 2006. Staff is requesting this item be amended, replacing pages listed under Exhibit LRP 2005-00011:A, pages 23 through 27, with the attached pages to reflect the introduction and action taken at the May 16th hearing. That's your changes.
Thank you. At this time, I would like to entertain a motion for the presentations of...
A second.
Moved by Supervisor Ovid, seconded by Supervisor Lento. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Ayes have it. Mr. Greek.
Thank you, Supervisor Asajian, members of the board. Good morning. It's a pleasure to assist your board this morning with celebrating 25 and 30-year county service awards for employees. Heather Gunderlach is also supporting this effort this morning, and I need to mention that Risk Management's Glenn Estrada and Susan Baker are a key part of this process. In recognizing the employees for 25 and 30 years, we'll start this morning with the 25-year employees, and since the first one is an elected official, I will turn that privilege over to you, Cacho.
It gives me great pleasure. Julie is with us. Would you come to the podium, please? I'll read a little background about Julie, not trying to embarrass her or anything. Julie started her employment with the county on January 26, 1981, as an eligibility worker 1 with the Department of Social Services, with an hourly salary of $5.16. Times should have changed. She moved to the clerk recorder's office on August 30, 1982, as an account clerk. She promoted over the years and held the title of account clerk, legal process clerk 2 and 3, administrative services officers 2 and 3. She was promoted to the position of deputy county clerk in November 1991. In November of 1994, she was appointed as the county clerk recorder by the Board of Supervisors, filling the vacancy left by the prior clerk recorder. She was also elected by the voters to fill this position in November of 1994 and has served in this position ever since. Julie has served as Secretary, Vice President, and President of the California Recorders Association. As a past president, she is currently serving on the Advisory Council for the Association. She is an avid golfer, plays softball, and kayaks with her husband. She actively supports various local charities, including the Literacy Council and Mend the Children. Over the years, she has been known as to enjoy Halloween costumes that included her dressing as Carmen Miranda, a construction worker, and the devil with the blue dress on. You know who's telling these stories, don't you? She resides with her husband of 25 years, Rick, along with their cats, Scooter and Roxanne. The employees of the clerk recorder unanimously agree she's a great boss who has handled many changes, including office locations, election functions, and staffing. She's always in the middle of whatever change is going on and has handled these changes with a smile and sense of humor. It's a great pleasure to have you with us this morning.
Congratulations.
Ms. Rowell, if you would like to say a word.
Thank you. It's an honor, and I appreciate the board recognizing employees. I do want to say that those Halloween costumes were before I became an elected official. And it was probably one of the biggest regrets of the staff that Halloween often fell like the week we were doing poll worker training. So it didn't really seem appropriate to show up dressed as the devil with the blue dress on for poll worker training or whatever. But anyway, I want to thank the board. I also want to thank all the employees who I've worked with over the years. It's been a real pleasure to be able to serve in this capacity. And I look forward to at least 4.5 more years in this capacity. Thank you.
Supervisor Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to comment that I appreciate the fine work that Julie's done. She's really known throughout the county as doing an exceptional job as our county clerk, and I appreciate that she's willing to do that and take a pay cut. I tend to work odd hours and come into the garage on weekends and evenings and early mornings, and the only other car in the garage is Julie's, so I know she's up here putting in her hours, and thank you very much, Julie.
Others are riding their bicycles. It's a bicycle month.
I did manage to ride it about 75% of the time so far.
Mr. Greek.
We have two additional folks to recognize this morning for 25 years. I would ask it that as their names are announced, the department head will please approach the left podium and the employee the right podium. Before speaking, please provide your name and department for the record. And after the award exchange, the employee is invited to make a brief statement and shake the board members' hands. So we'll start with the district attorney's office, Jerry Shea, and employee Michelle Gula.
Good morning, Chairman Ashajian and members of the Board of Supervisors. I'm Jerry Shea, District Attorney, and I'm really pleased today to be here to join you to recognize Michelle Gula for her 25 years of service to the County of San Luis Obispo. Throughout her 25-year career, Michelle has advanced from clerical staff to supervisor to manager, always achieving the highest level of expertise at each of these stages. She's currently our office's administrative services officer and has been an important member of our management team for the past 13 years. Immediately prior to that, she was the clerical supervisor at the former Family Support Division and supervisor at the former San Luis Obispo Municipal Court. Michelle's departmental personnel file folder is overflowing with letters, cards, emails, and notes from her supervisors, her peers, from members of outside agencies, and from members of the public, thanking her either for her extra efforts to assist them or for making their jobs easier. One of the letters in her file has the following quote in it, quote, "If there were something like an Academy Award for an outstanding job helping others, Michelle would deserve to be honored with it. She has clearly demonstrated throughout her career with the county a willingness to do that extra mile to help others, both in their professional and personal lives. As our office's assistant media liaison, Michelle has established a solid rapport with members of the local press, helping them show the public how the criminal justice system is working. Her skills, experience, dedication, and professionalism have helped our office become more efficient and more effective in serving the public. And so we are very proud of Michelle's 25 years of service to our county and to its citizens, and we thank you, the Board of Supervisors, for honoring her with this well-deserved recognition today. Thank you very much.
Jerry, come back here. Bring her back here.
If you would. Did you want to say a word?
Just briefly, I would like to thank the county for all these years of an excellent job, and my boss, Jerry Shea, for the best job that I've ever had. And looking towards retirement, my husband thanks you, too, for my wonderful pension plan. Thank you.
Next, we'll move to the Sheriff Coroner's Office. I would request Pat Hedges and Lisa Mars to come forward.
Good morning, Pat Hedges, Sheriff Coroner. It's certainly an honor and a privilege to be able to recognize Lisa this morning. I have a few comments that I believe she's had the opportunity to edit, and so we should be good to go here. Lisa started her career with the Sheriff's Department in the Records and Warrants Unit as an intermediate typist clerk in February of 1981. She stayed in that position for 5 years until she transferred to the Sheriff's Headquarters as a transcriber. In 1988, Lisa was assigned to the Sheriff's North Station as a legal clerk, a position she continues to hold to this day. During her 25 years with the Sheriff's Department, Lisa has seen many changes within the department. Most notable, when Lisa started with the Sheriff's Department, we had about 170 employees. We now have 373. Her first assignment at the North Station was in a small office in a commercial development. We now have a new modern North Station. Lisa has been involved in many projects throughout the years. The most recent was her participation in the research of our new report management system. Lisa was a part of a group of employees who reviewed different records management systems, listened to vendors' proposals, and made recommendations for functions to be included in the final records program. When Lisa was asked what she remembers most of her experiences with the Sheriff's Department, she had two incidences that stood out. The first was not long after she was hired with the department in the early 80s, when a large demonstration was held at Diablo Canyon that included numerous arrests. I think to the tune of about 2,000. Wow. Lisa was assigned to assist with the booking of female prisoners. Lisa explained that she had never been involved in such a large-scale operation, and she was very excited to be a part of it. She also remembers an incident where a gentleman called from out of state seeking assistance in locating a daughter she had never met. That he had never met. He explained to Lisa that years ago his girlfriend gave birth to their daughter and then disappeared. He told Lisa that he was finally able to obtain information that his daughter was somewhere in the Templeton area. Lisa was able to locate the daughter. Lisa called her, explained the situation, and gave her the gentleman's information, allowing the daughter to decide if she wanted to contact him or not. 3 weeks later, Lisa said the father and daughter came to the North Station, extremely happy and gave her a dozen roses in appreciation of her help. Due to her longevity with the department, Lisa is a wealth of information not only about the department, but also about the communities we serve. Lisa is married to a deputy sheriff and looks forward to many more years serving the community and the sheriff's department. And I will conclude with the fact that we look forward to her serving those many years as well. Thank you.
I just want to say thank you for this very much.
You're welcome.
We now have two 30-year employees this morning. I'll be turning it over to Supervisor Asajian. Before I do that, when your name's called, I would request that the department head go to the left podium again and the employee to the right podium, and employees are again invited to say a few words along with the department head after the presentation.
Okay.
Chairman Asajian.
Next is Dennis Philbin. Before I even read, Mr. Robert has some comments to make.
You think?
You mentioned Arm Dwayne. I know Dennis too well.
Let me say a few words, read a few words about Dennis. A lifelong resident of San Luis Obispo, Dennis began his career with the old Department of Parks and Beaches as a gate attendant at Lopez Lake in 1975. Dennis quickly moved from park maintenance worker to park ranger 3. By 1983, he was selected as park superintendent for maintenance. Since that time, he has left an indelible mark on county parks and the entire community. During his tenure as parks superintendent, Dennis has played a leadership role as a department safety officer and has served numerous times as the chair of the County Safety Commission. Many safety programs implemented in the Parks Program by Dennis have been adopted for use through the county. He has been the go-to person for the Department of General Services on safety issues for almost 25 years. He has also enhanced the well-being of county park facilities by implementing a well-run, integrated pest management program. Under Dennis' direction, unnecessary spraying has been curtailed while employee and visitor safety has been improved. He became a certified playground safety inspector to keep park play areas at peak safety levels for our youngest visitors. He has had company in his service to the county. His mother served many years in the personnel department, and his brother served many years working for the county library in San Luis Obispo. As early as 1983, Dennis's evaluation noted that he has what it takes to institute effective working relationships with park personnel, other agencies, and park patrons. His good nature, well-developed sense of humor, and personal integrity has been hallmarks of Dennis, his career making him an excellent ambassador of goodwill for San Luis Obispo County. Congratulations for 30 years. Thank you. Why did you come up here?
It's going to be a lot of reflection from Dennis and I.
We'll start with Mr. Dwayne Live.
A few words, and then we'll turn it over to Dennis. Dwayne Live, General Services Director. I don't know if you noticed when you were shaking hands with Dennis, I think his hands are as big as Cacho's. He's got the biggest, and I wear a size large, and he just makes my hand feel so small. Dennis, I don't know where the years have gone. I've been with Dennis, thanks, Harry, I've been with Dennis for 26 of those 30 years. When I met Dennis, he was out at Lopez, and when I really got to know Dennis, it was a baseball game, as I recall, in the early 80s when the main office played a game against the Lopez staff, and as I remember right, you kicked their butts pretty bad. And he admitted outside that they cheated. You know, that's how they won. He has been such a key figure in the success of the Parks Program for the last three decades. It's hard to say enough thanks about his influence on parks. We recognized early in the 80s that we needed to bring him downtown and put his big hands on the bigger problem, and he's been downtown since 83. He's an expert in pesticides, pesticide management. Never ceases to amaze me how much he knows about bugs. There was a little alert that went through the office last week about a spider, a very unique kind of spider, and what it can do to you. Dennis knew right away that that spider can't live on the Central Coast. So he sent out an email and said, well, thanks very much for the info, but by the way, that spider can't live here. You know, how does he remember all this stuff? I don't know. As you mentioned, he's been our safety coordinator. He's been a valuable, valuable asset to me as a department head, and I think to the county because of his relationship with the county safety committee. But he's also been our harassment coordinator. To put it simply, I think he hears it all. If there's a complaint in the department, some sort of a harassment problem, he gets involved in it. I don't even know how many of these things he gets involved in because he does it independent of me. He's excellent. He's always willing to help out. As you mentioned, his good humor, he's been a pleasure to be around. And I don't know where all the years went, but I can tell you that, Dennis, you've certainly made him a lot easier. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, I'd just like to thank the board for this honor. And I couldn't have gotten this far without the help of, you know, all my coworkers, the whole leadership within the department, starting with Dwayne. Here's a guy that's willing to dress up like a seal and swim across the shark-infested waters of San Francisco, and I think we call it chumming, but he's willing to go that far. George Rosenberger, who never has left a pun unintended, for those, my mentor and tormentor, Mr. Jenny, Pete Jenny. Actually, one of the biggest reasons I think I've lasted so long in here is I've gone through, obviously, a number of park managers, and this guy's the real deal. He is, I guess, best characterized as I see his job to comfort the disturbed and disturb the comfortable. So, and he does that very well. All of my coworkers out there in general services, in parks, especially the little people, Jan DeLeo and Ernie Del Rio. sorry, Ernie. He gave me that line on the way in. And despite what they think, I don't suffer from insanity. I really enjoy it. My mother, for obvious reasons, and my whole fan club out there, appreciate them showing up. My wife, Shelley, who long ago taught me that men are like grapes or fine wine. They start out as grapes, and it's up to women to stomp the crap out of them and make them something decent to have dinner with. In my 30 years with the county, I've learned a few things, like don't compare yourself to others. They're more screwed up than you think. Nobody cares if you can't dance. Just get up and dance. One thing that unites all human beings, regardless of age, gender, religion, ethnicity, economic status, is that deep down inside, we all believe we're above average drivers. If you had to identify in one word the reason why the human race has yet to achieve its full potential, that word would be meetings. Never be afraid to try something new. An amateur built the Ark, and a group of professionals built the Titanic. Thank you very much, and I appreciate it.
Guys, before you leave,
I don't know if they cared after what you said. I would like to see your family stand up and be recognized.
Come on, guys. Everybody up. Gotcha. Thank you again.
I got Dennis,
supervisor of it.
Before you go, you know,
Dwayne's excited about that little spider. I just want to say they've never found anything to replace that railroad car in Templeton yet.
You had to bring it up, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. Our nemesis.
Thank you, Dennis.
Next person is Scott McLaughlin. Unfortunately, he couldn't be here with us today. But Scott served our community for 30 years and done a great job. But allow me, in his absence, read a little bit about him. Scott McLaughlin began his career with the Office of Technical Services at the County of San Luis Obispo in March of 1976. He's seen a variety of changes in information technology, starting out as data entry operator and now working swing shift as a computer system technician in the Information Technology Department. He currently maintains our mainframe computing environment, processing large reports and monitoring our system to make sure they are running smoothly, as well as responding to technical support calls in the evenings. Scott has a wonderful attitude about his work and life in general. He readily shares his passion for art, and he continually is a source of inspiration for others. He is dedicated to his team, his customers, and the success of the county. Congratulations to Scott, and I want to thank you on behalf of the Board of Supervisors for all years of service to the county. And we look forward for his continued services to the department and the rest of us. Would you like to say a few words on his behalf as well?
Yes, thank you. Jeanette Pell, Chief Information Officer. I'm sorry that Scott couldn't make it here today. He works a swing shift, and sometimes it's difficult for him to get up this early. But on behalf of the Information Technology Department, I would like to thank Scott for 30 years of service to the County of San Luis Obispo. It is a pleasure working with Scott, and he is a well-respected member of our team. So congratulations to Scott, and thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greek.
With that, we'll move on to the public comment period. And at this time, Mr. Wampler.
Start. I think I'm going to wait.
I would like to ask the last person leaving if you can shut the doors behind you, please.
Yeah, Pat's got a new job.
There you, Pat.
I think
it'll be you, Pat.
Okay, are we ready?
With that, Mr. Wampler, if you come forward, please.
Good morning, Supervisor Sajin, members of the board. My name is Mark Wampler, Oceano resident. I'd like to make some brief comments on residents that live within the Zone 1 and 1A flood control districts. Before the levee broke at the Rio Grande Creek in 2001, I doubt that very few people have ever heard of the red-legged frog that lives in that creek. And I bet few people realize that the years of neglecting creek maintenance would have dire consequences as well. The Endangered Species Act was established in 1974, but we still don't know about that little green, that little red frog. We didn't know that this little frog was going to cost one day at least 500 property owners big-time property tax, not to mention hundreds of residents living in mobile home parks who will now face rent increases. We didn't know about this until the levee broke like headlines on the front page. The biggest consequence of negligence is having state regulatory agencies swoop in and cash in on local government debacles. Have we forgotten that California is a cash-strapped state? In the 39 years that I have lived and been around the area, I have never heard of an issue about cleaning out the Rio Grande Creek. Now that this 4th District management has aroused state bureaucracy, endless regulation and red tape don't even allow local maintenance of the creek to do the job it was supposed to do in the first place. Playing tiptoe around our red-legged friends isn't sitting too well with taxpayers. Residents living within the Zone 1 and 1A may have to live for decades with the consequences of negligence. I stood up at one of these state meetings and asked state officials about relocating these frogs so that a real clean-out operation could commence. I quickly got the thumbs down on that suggestion. Later, I thought to myself, possibly there's an imbalance of nature, and it should be adjusted. Why not consider that there might be a shortage of snakes in the creek? We should be reminded that state bureaucracy mandates cannot be challenged or appealed anything short of a ballot measure. The county managers have aroused the state sledgehammer, and now the flood zone residents will have to pay the price. I'm pretty sure that part of the consequence of negligence will be vigorous voter turnout next month. Thank you very much.
Ms. Redwald, followed by Gail McPherson.
Good morning, Julie Redwald, County Clerk Recorder. I'm just here to remind our voters out there that there's exactly 2 weeks before the June 6th election. Next Tuesday is the last day to request an absentee ballot by mail. And since your board is not meeting next week, I also want to remind everyone that we will be open on the Saturday and Sunday prior to the election for any last-minute voters that realize that they have to be out of town. So we're here ready to get those ballots cast and count those ballots after the election. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Gail McPherson, followed by Ellen Martin.
Good morning. I'm Gail McPherson. I live in Los Osos, and I'm here to talk about, of course, Los Osos. I would like to ask for your help and support in participation in mediation, regardless of the outcome of the proposed dissolution that will be discussed this month at LAFCO. I'm asking that we work towards reconciliation and a type of mediation that would provide some bringing together of all stakeholders in the community to work on solutions. Because whatever solutions come out of the community, these people need to be part of that process. So the organizations that that exist, that including the 5,000 people that are going to get cease and desist orders, perhaps within the next year, are all stakeholders. And I had noted that there are some collaborative options that are before the county, and that there are internal discussions about what type of collaborative actions could take place between the Los Osos CSD and the county to provide a sewer project. I wanted to make sure that you are aware that there's a tech report that's due June 1st, and I would hope that if you'd like to come to a wastewater committee meeting and get more information on what is being proposed for the wastewater plan, that project report will be completed in August. I know that no one in Los Osos supports ignoring the ballot box, and we want to make sure that any collaborative efforts, any cooperative efforts between Los Osos and the county would include something that's a valid, approved process for the public. The citizens of Los Osos have a desire for local control, and they have a desire for a treatment process and project. And so we just hope that in this process of mediation and putting together a proposal for mediation, that you will be open to that as the CSD is and the community at large. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Mr. Martin, followed by Kit Swanson.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, fellow board members. We thank you for taking the time to hear the travails of the citizens of Los Osos. We will be coming before you to keep you advised of the progress of our problems and our elected officials, the dedicated, hardworking members of our board of directors of the Los Osos Community Services District, will also appear before you. The weeks and months ahead, you will see us up here addressing you. And the reason for that, we want you to monitor the progress that we're making in Los Osos. And not be subject to the over-the-top headlines and the inflammatory stories of the terrible Telegram, the Telegram Tribune. Sorry, I meant to say Telegram Tribune, sometimes referred to as a trib, or like in trivial. Some of us will come before you and occasionally show you some anger and frustration and lack of attention as a forgotten stepchild will occasionally do from years of neglect and abandonment. With rare exception, I know that most of you share the well-being of all the citizens of the county. And were elected to serve all of us, and most, with rare exception again, do so in your many deliberations and decisions that affect us all in our daily lives. And for that, I thank you again. As you all aware of a Pandora's box of evil and confusion has befallen Las Osas, and we can assure you that as we democratically intend to fight and work hard with our board of directors of the Las Osas Community Service District, our elected members, to maintain self-rule and solve our wastewater problems, if we are given a fair and equal opportunity. That's what we want, Mr. Chairman and fellow board members, an equal opportunity. And that's what this country was founded on, not on selective, unfounded, unproven, like the prosecution of the Water Quality Control Board with the award of cease and desist orders. Again, gentlemen, thank you for your time.
Mr. Swanson, followed by Bill Moylan.
Good morning, Keith Swanson, Los Osos. I'm again here to just support Los Osos and the changes that they're going through. We have to kind of remember where we came from. Back in April of 2004, the Coastal Commission found substantial issue with the sewer project. The community started to dislike the project as being in the middle of town. And then the wave began. The first two directors opposing the project were elected. Then there was a recall election. The recall election got rid of the rest of those board members because the community voted against the project. The unfortunate thing that happened to this community and has nothing to do with this board is the fact that they started the project before the election. That put us in the quagmire we are in today. They could have preserved the SRF loan if they had waited, because then they'd have an option to modify the project. They started with the contractors working. That cost the community money. They took a major risk with the community's money by starting that project before the election. And it's now that all this information is coming out. Even back in 2002, the Coastal Commission now realizes during the revocation hearing that they were deceived about the location of this project because there was another location out of town. And that's all this, for me, has all been about the location of this project. But now we find out that there's the environmental reports are flawed. Everything that's been flawed, the board that's on there now has been touting that from the get-go, that there's a problem with this. And it's been ignored. The board, the old board, ignored all of these concerns. And that's why we are here today. And now LAFCO is either talking about divesting the project or perhaps a JPA with the county. I don't think that you'd want to take over this project, because you know how Los Osos can ramp up a community when they're opposed to a project like has been proposed for Los Osos. So I ask for your cooperation. Work out a deal with Los Osos that's affordable, out of town, is sustainable. There's new technology. There's things that can be done instead of putting a major sewer project in the middle of Los Osos. And just to remind you that part of the consultants that the old CSD had steered them in the wrong direction. And now we had an engineer's report from the Montgomery Watson, and then the bids came in 46% higher than the engineer's estimate. That should have been a sign right there that, wait a minute, we need to reevaluate. But they didn't, because it was just another check mark. They wanted to proceed. They wanted to push this project through no matter what it costs this community, and that's what we're suffering today. Thank you.
Yeah. Mr. Moylan, followed by David Dugan.
Chairman, board members, my name is Bill Moylan and I live in Los Osos. The reason I am here today is because I believe that there is something that needs clarification and one thing that needs immediate action. First, for clarification, I will read two definitions of the word recuse. The Encarta World English Dictionary defines recuse as to disqualify somebody, to declare yourself to be or to render somebody disqualified to judge something or participate in something because of possible bias or personal interest. The Compact Oxford English Dictionary defines recuse as to excuse oneself from a case because of possible lack of impartiality. I just wanted to clarify the definition of that word. And now I will address what I believe needs immediate action. In reference to the newly elected directors of the Los Osos CSD and the passing of Measure B requiring the movement of the sewer from the Tri-W site, Supervisor Shirley Bianchi sent a letter on this past October 20th to the State Water Board Chair, Arthur Baggett, stating that, and I quote, and you have the quote in your hands, "This is a particularly difficult situation since the current district board either will not or cannot understand any governmental process." I want to read that again because it's very important what she says. "The current district board either will not or cannot understand any governmental process." She then goes on to say, "At one point I was asked if the political will exists here in San Luis Obispo County to assume the management of the project Tri-W if for whatever reason the district were unable to continue with it." She further says, "Let me assure you that you have my full support, and I believe that the other supervisors would give great weight to my position." Now, after hearing that illuminating section of Ms. Bianchi's letter to the State Water Board Chair, it is obvious that this letter is not, by any stretch, unbiased. In fact, the position taken by Ms. Bianchi in this letter is biased, and indeed states unequivocally her personal bias against the current Los Osos CSD and her personal interest in the Tri-W site. Ms. Bianchi's expressed opinion showing a lack of impartiality regarding the ability of the Los Osos CSD to govern leads to the conclusion that the only ethical action to take is for her to recuse herself from the LAFCO proceedings on the Los Osos CSD immediately. If Ms. Bianchi does not recuse herself voluntarily, then I request that the other commissioners recuse her so the LAFCO proceedings on the Los Osos CSD can proceed in an impartial manner. Thank you very much.
Mr. Dugan, followed by Richard Margotson.
Dave Dugan, resident of Los Osos and candidate for the LOCSD. Last week I spoke to this board, I believe it was last week, on a question of bias concerning the cease and desist orders and also of others involved in the proposed dissolution of the LOCSD and a perceived bias in that matter. I come before you again to voice my concern on a question of bias in the matter of the dissolution and the staff of LAFCO. I have here a copy of an article written by LAFCO's executive officer, Paul Hood, published February 2006 in the Cal LAFCO magazine Sphere title as "The Sewer Turns." In this article, he clearly states personal opinions of the upcoming dissolution hearing and his opinion of the current LOCSD board members. First, he shows he has little or no knowledge of the history of the issues because of factual errors concerning population, the SRF loan, studies, and which agency has purview concerning these issues. But where I believe he shows his bias is in the description of two board members as anti-sewer. He then describes the three recalled board members as pro-sewers, insinuating that the three new board members were anti-sewer. He then equates the wastewater issue to a game of tag, showing disrespect for the residents of Los Osos. But what was surprising to find out, as stated in the February article, was LAFCO staff was already working with the county on the responsibility the county would have if they took over the services of the LOCSD. This was happening prior to the final draft of the petition being okayed by LAFCO staff and before a single signature was collected. This action was not only premature, but in my opinion, helped the petitioners to gain an advantage over the LOCSD and their supporters. It is my belief that the staff of LAFCO and others who may offer a recommendation on the issue of dissolution may show bias in that recommendation, thus tainting the process. It is my opinion that elections in November for the three LOCSD seats will be the only way to assure fairness in the process and a consensus through a mandate of the community. Thank you.
Mr. Margotson.
Richard Margotson. The reason I'm here today is I'd like an update on where we are with the resource capacity study. I know it was ordered at the beginning of the year, and I know Shirley said that they were in the process. It's very important that this process be expedited. Tomorrow night in Los Osos, the Water Operations Committee is going to have a special meeting for a discussion of initiating an RFP or some other form of starting a new rate study for the water district to possibly increase the water rates in Los Osos. I think the information that will come from the resource capacity study is very important in that discussion, so the report that is ordered and paid for by the citizens can be a complete report this time, because the one that was ordered 3 years ago didn't have a lot of the information needed to actually give us the appropriate rate structure for Los Osos, which would have incorporated water conservation measures and a number of other issues. This resource capacity study is important to all the districts, but right now it's very important to Los Osos. The other thing I want to just quickly follow up on is Keith Swanson's comment. Another reason that the board was changed, and I keep saying this, it was going to cost $205 a month for the next 20 years for every citizen in the prohibition zone in Los Osos. And that was at the current estimates when those bids were open. That's without any overruns, any changes in the project during the 2 years of construction. That was a major factor because we had no federal funding at that point. Thank you.
Thank you. Do we have an answer for Mr. Margetson? That's where the resource capacity study is?
No, Mr. Chairman. That's the kind of information. If Mr. Margetson calls up the planning department, they can provide that.
Okay. Thank you. That was the last request to speak, public comment period. This time I would close the public comment period. Were you going to say something? Next item on our agenda is consent. I don't have any request to speak. Does anyone from the public wishes to comment on this item? Seeing none, bring it back to the board. Supervisor Ovid?
No, Mr. Chair.
Supervisor Patterson?
No, Mr. Chair.
Supervisor Antle?
Yes, I'd like to pull B14 for comments.
Okay. B14.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to just take a moment and publicly recognize and thank Dave Flynn. If Dave would stand up in our audience, I'm not trying to embarrass him, but oftentimes in government we hear what can't happen because of a process or some funding or a deadline. And B14 is a left turn lane at Tank Farm Road. It's a tremendous safety hazard. It's an identified problem location as far as accidents in the past. And recently Dave was at a meeting, the California Transportation Commission meeting. The funding was there and then it was pulled off, and we wouldn't be able to have this project going today if he didn't do some creative fast thinking on his feet. And basically Dave was able to get this project for advertising for bids before the funds were officially allocated, which I don't think we've done before. And because of that, we were able to acquire the state and federal funds and make this project move forward. And I want to publicly commend him, because obviously that's a safety issue that's very important, but for using some great creative thinking to get a project done, and I thank you.
Thank you.
Move to approve
amendment.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Ovid, seconded by Supervisor Patterson. A roll call, please.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Next item, if you'll introduce that, Madam Clerk.
Next item is item D1. This is submittal of the third quarter financial report for fiscal year 2005-2006.
Sir Grant.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Today I actually have two items. The first one will be the third quarter report for this current year. And the next item will be presenting the proposed budget for your approval and then setting budget hearings. So first we'll launch into the third quarter report. And Nikki, you want to bring that up for me? Okay, here we go. We have the third quarter report today, and we want to report that everything looks pretty good. This is an overview of the financial performance and budget adjustments. And just so you know, third quarter time frame is from January 1 through March 31. The key findings here are that general fund expenditures were 70% of budget, while general fund revenues were 63% realized, and that non-departmental revenue is projected to exceed budgeted levels by about $13 million, which is a good sign for us. Also, just for your information, you already know this most likely, but about $1.5 million of unbudgeted Prop 42 road funding was appropriated by your board earlier last month. And we estimate, after we take in all the considerations of expenditures and revenues, that we will have a year-end fund balance of about $22.5 million, which again shows that we are healthy and the departments have been doing a good job on expenditure savings and revenue generation. We have a brief summary of budget adjustments, just so you'll be aware of what's going on. We have a total of about $14 million of expenses increases over the budgeted amounts. This is the time of year that we come back and we adjust for prevailing wage increases. For most departments, we don't put those prevailing wage increases in their budget at the beginning of the year. We use contingencies later in the year to fund anything that we need above and beyond the department budget. The prevailing wage increase was about $11 million this year, and there was about $3 million of other expense increases that I'll talk about in just a moment. Of that total, the departments absorbed over $11 million of those expenses with department savings and unanticipated revenue. So we have a request today to appropriate to your board to appropriate about $3 million from general fund contingencies to fund the remaining portion of those expenditures. So if we look at a summary of key departmental issues, some of these we've reported before. We're coming back just to let your board know what the update is. On the assessor side, there was a loss of about $660,000 of property tax administration funds. The impact of the general fund is zero, and that is because the assessor used some one-time property tax administration program funds that had been left over from the prior year to fund and backfill for that loss. Additionally, there's some expenditure savings within their budget that they've been able to gain. So the net impact is zero. What will happen, though, is next year we'll have to absorb this loss. It was not in the budget for next year. So the assessor associations statewide are working to regain that. But at this point, there is this property tax administration program is not on the radar. The clerk recorder has increased expenses. It was about $420,000 of increased expenses due to the election. And again, the clerk has been able to absorb that within the budget. The net impact is zero. There's also a movement afoot to try to regain some of those, have the state pay for those expenses. But to date, that's not happening. It isn't in the governor's budget, nor is it in the May revision of the governor's budget. So the likelihood is we may not see those special election funds come through for us. County Council, there was a shortfall due to legal billings and litigation. That's not unexpected. We don't try to fund everything, and we don't know everything that's happening in County Council as we go through the year, so these things will come up, and they'll have to be taken care of in like we're doing today in the third quarter. District Attorney has a revenue shortfall, but we have received word from the state that there's some additional revenue is coming in. We're not sure exactly how much, but it does look better for the District Attorney towards the end of the year. So I thought I'd let your board know that. There are also some increased expenses for temp help and various services and supplies with a net impact of the general fund of $178,000. General Services had a revenue shortfall. They were able to absorb the most of that with impact of the general fund of about $30,000. Ag Commissioner, about the same story, revenue shortfall of about $144,000, primarily attributable to the gas tax. And then the impact, they've been able to absorb most of that with a general fund impact of about $20 million. Same for public health. Throughout the year, we've been concerned both in public health and mental health about their revenue. We've made some adjustments along the way, and these adjustments are paying off. You can see that there's very limited impact on both of these budget unit numbers, and that's attributable, again, to both those departments looking at finding ways to either get additional revenue or cut expenses. There was also a hiring freeze on mental health that helped considerably to help balance their budget. Another item is the law enforcement medical care. We're seeing this and have for years that as the jail population expands, we have more medical expenses, and we don't get reimbursed for that. So the impact of the general fund continues to go up. You'll see that in next year's budget as well. So there's little we can do to take care of that. We just need to fund those medical expenses for those jail inmates. All in all, it looks good. We're doing a decent job of trying to live within the budgeted expenditures, and we're going to end the year, as I said, with a $22.5 million fund balance. And so what we're asking you to do today is receive this third quarter report. You're going to approve budget adjustments totaling about $6 million per the attachments that are in your handouts. Again, the general fund cost of that is around $3 million. And then accept some library gift funds, discharge bad debt from mental health, which we do on a quarterly basis, and then amend a fixed asset list for child support services for a copy machine and planning department for a vehicle. And then lastly, authorize the auditor controller to close the enterprise financial budget system. We created a budget for building our new financial system. That is, for the most part, done. We have got the new financial system in, the new HR system in, and we can close this budget out. And this allows us to use the carryover money, which is we think will be about $500,000 left in that fund. We'll put it back into our accounting reserves for other accounting system replacements, primarily budget that we're looking at right now. And that ends my PowerPoint, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Any questions to Mr. Grant? Does anyone from the public wishes to comment on this item? I have no request to speak for. Seeing none, bring it back to the supervisors.
Move for staff's recommendations.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Ovitt, seconded by Supervisor Lenthal. A roll call, please.
Mr. Ovitt.
Aye.
Mr. Lenthal.
Aye.
Mr. Patterson.
Aye.
Mr. Shajian.
Aye. Next item, please.
Next item is items D2. This is introduction of the fiscal year 2006-2007 proposed budget.
Thank you, Jim Grant, County Administrative Office. We'll now talk about the budget for next year. This is the proposed budget. We're bringing that forward today so that you'll have a chance to look at it, and then the public will also have a chance to look at it with budget hearings starting on June 19th. So what we've done to prepare for this budget for you is we developed the proposed budget through your board guidance based on community-wide results of a safe, healthy, livable, prosperous, well-governed community. The budget goals, the policies, and performance measures that you have previously approved. This budget actually maintains the core community services that are sustainable. We think that the budget we're providing today is balanced. It is using ongoing revenues for ongoing expenses. There are no reserves that we use to balance the budget, so we're in decent financial shape going into the next year. Part of that is based on the state fiscal picture, and the governor's budget is in much better shape than it has been in years, and he has proposed a budget that on the state side that is a current law budget. That means that it provides existing services for all the state services, and it also maintains some fiscal balance. There's enough state revenue that has been generated above and beyond what they had thought would be to actually help pay down the structural debt that the state has and to start paying schools for Prop 98 guarantees. The governor's budget has some very positive aspects for us that include the end of ERAF 3, and ERAF is the Educational Revenue Augmentation Fund. That is basically when they took our property taxes to the state so that the state could balance their budget. ERAF 3 is the third iteration of that. There's still ERAF 1 and 2, of which we're not getting any return back on. But ERAP 3 was a short-term takeaway. We're getting that back. That means about $2.3 million for the general fund that comes back to us on an ongoing nature. Also, Prop 42 transportation funding is coming back, although I heard this morning from Public Works that there may be an issue with that, that the Senate and the committees are looking at this, and they may cut that Prop 42 return in half. So we're not quite sure where we are on that yet. There's still some discussion and dickering going on at the state level to determine where we are on the Prop 42 money. And then there's a variety of other county programs that are being funded, such as the Williamson Act money that pays a payback for property, gives us back money in lieu of property tax for ag preserves, and a lot of public safety programs. Additionally, the May revise just came out, and that has even more good news, and I won't get into the specifics because we're still working them out, but it looks like there'll be additional funding for public safety, for libraries, for emergency preparedness, and health and human services. So it's a potpourri of good news. We're not sure exactly what that means at this point, but we will be looking at that over the next couple of weeks, and we'll have more definitive answers for you. And, of course, this is all predicated on the governor's budget being accepted by the legislature, which, as we all know, goes through a lot of iterations before it's final. But it looks good on all fronts for us in that area. Our budget balancing strategies, we used operational revenues to fund ongoing operations. We don't have any structural deficits. We are healthy enough that we didn't need to use any general fund reserves or designations to help balance a budget. And we have a general fund contingency at 5%, which is about a little over $17 million, which is considered healthy. Our budget balancing equation shows that we have an increase of about $27.8 million, an 8% increase in the general fund. And you can see the fund balance is $22 million with our revenue, no use of reserves for a total budget of $358 million. And then it shows current cost and contingencies and new reserves. There's a bit of new reserves for fire replacement equipment built into the budget. In terms of positions, we're actually adding 64 or recommending 64 positions and also recommending the elimination of 25 positions on the position allocation list for a net of 39. The staffing increases, they run the gamut, and across the board, I'll hit on the highlights here. The library, 9.5 positions to restore some of the library funding and positions to stop random closures of the library. Hopefully we can also add some hours to the library. We're looking at that. We're looking at the Mental Health Act, you know, is the new services that we must provide. It's all funded 100%, and that's 16 positions. We're looking at adding some positions in planning and parks and probation. And the sheriff is 10 positions. 6 of those are deputies. 2 are correctional officers. So across the board, from the functional areas of public safety and public health down to community services, we're really hitting all areas. The decreases include the clinical lab, which is already closed, as you know. I think it was the end of March this year that it was closed. So these are just coming off our technical position allocation list. And then a few others that you see there based on some service reductions and just some savings that we were able to identify. Some of our major budget increases that might be of interest to you are salary and benefits are over $14 million. This is an area where you always have to be concerned. This is an area that will not go away. It will always be more expensive, and it's something that your board needs to take a look at and follow on a year-to-year basis. We are healthy enough to recommend that $3 million goes into roads-related flood control, which the board asked for earlier this year. Our liability fund is in need of a little bit of shoring up, so the $1.6 million into the liability fund, although on the other side, workers' comp is doing very well. There's a savings in the workers' comp area of about $1.6 million, so it's really a trade-off at this point. So we're working now on the liability fund to get that in shape and get those reserves up. Fire equipment replacement, building maintenance, we're able to put another $3 million into maintenance, which we have a lot of county buildings that we do a good job on maintenance, but we need to continue to do that And if we stay on top of it, ultimately it will be cheaper in the long run to provide money now than it would be later. And then we're also recommending putting additional dollars into capital project reserves, $4 million. That will help on all the building projects we have in the queue, of which are some of them are in the budget, and we're working on a five-year plan to bring back to your board later on. So where are we in cost of county services? As usual, the health and human services side cost over half the budget, basically, nearly half the budget. Those are primarily funded from state and federal revenues. You don't have much say over those. Those are mandated services, and so they take up a tremendous portion of it. The next portion is public protection, which has a large general fund cost to it, and then you can see land-based support and then financial and then on down the line. Just wanted to show you basically where the money is spent and where it all goes. Quick look at revenue, just where you know we're in a healthy position because of our discretionary revenue for the most part. We're going to have an increase of almost $20 million over the current year, and property taxes are by far the largest driver of that. They're going up about 12%, and we see that probably not sustainable over the long haul, but more 8 to 9% probably is now over the next 5 years, so we'll need to be cautious of that as we go forward. Also, property tax in lieu of vehicle license fee. This is driven by the state. It appears to be going up quite nicely. We're still looking at some of the reasons why. And the state doesn't, it's all based on sales, but we're not quite sure why we're getting as much as we are. We're still looking at that. Then the end of ERAF 3, which I've explained before, and then our sales tax and our just vehicle license fee is fairly stable and growing at about 5% range. So there's the discretionary revenue over a three-year time period. It looks good on the VLF side and the property tax side. Sales, TOT, they're not huge revenue sources, but they're healthy and they're going up, like I said, in the near 5% range. If you look at all the revenue in total, not just discretionary, again, intergovernmental, meaning state and federal revenue, are the biggest revenue sources that we have, with property taxes and other taxes, and then service charges following that. And that all puts together to help us fund the budget. So what we're asking you to do today is just right now adopt a resolution approving the proposed budget and then ordering the publication of the legal notices and then schedule the public hearings to begin Monday, June 19th. And that concludes my comments. Thank you.
Thank you. In our budget for the building maintenance and capital projects, any of that meet the needs of bringing some of our buildings to ADA requirements?
Absolutely. We are funding almost $1 million next year in that area. Every year we put in about $500,000 to $1 million to tackle all the ADA issues that we come up with. Community buildings, I think maybe that's what you're referring to, is something we're looking at and trying to roll into all the funding. But
and some of the veteran buildings.
Yes. We're looking at all of those. Now, there's a tremendous need out there for this, so we're trying to prioritize what's needed. But we are definitely supportive of ADA issues, and we are funding as much as we can in that area right now.
One other thing that kind of bugs me, that we're forcing to special elections by the state, yet we don't get any reimbursement. Do we know of any other counties that were able to get any money?
You know, I don't know if Julie's here right now, but I would ask her, the clerk, to see. But I don't know of any.
Mr. H might want to.
Short answer is no. The state has stiffed all 58 counties on this one, and we're continuing to have discussions in Sacramento about wanting that money back.
And or can we, 58 counties, come together for any future special elections imposed upon us by the state to say we won't if you don't pay?
You can always say you won't, but that would probably result in you losing your office and the state coming in and running it directly. Basically, if they say there's going to be an election, there will be an election, and then we play this back-and-forth game about reimbursement. Anyway, we're kind of unhappy this time around because the state indicated that they would be
providing reimbursement, and the governor's folk, Department of Finance, indicated that they were planning on putting some money for that in the May revise, and that money didn't show up. So CSAC's working on it on behalf of counties at the state level. We'll see what happens.
Okay. Thank you. Supervisor Patterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Grant, do you know offhand what our reserve balance is?
Well, our actual general fund reserve is $8 million.
Okay, and that's the general stable for the last couple of years?
That's been stable for 10 to 15 years, I think. We haven't touched it. It is a general reserve. Is only you can only use it during times of emergency or times of budget when we come back on a yearly basis. Otherwise, you can't touch it.
Okay, well, we did use it, or was it contingencies that was used to balance the budget in previous years?
Yeah, we've used some contingencies. We used some designations, which are a bit different than general reserves. The designations are specific to an area such as automation replacement or building replacement. The general reserves has no real designation other than the fact they're there for emergency purposes. But we have used some designations in the past to help balance the budget. We don't need to do that this year.
Great. And you said the balance is approximately $8 million?
For the general reserve, okay. Right. We have other designations top of that. Yes.
Thank you. At this time, we'll open up to the public. And first request to speak, and the only request to speak, is Mr. Greening.
Thank you. I'm Eric Greening, and looking forward to the budget hearings, which I believe will be June 19th, 20th, and perhaps 21st. It would probably be helpful if it could be announced on the radio and television how the public, in the meantime, can review the budget documents, and are they presently available, about to be available, and where can they be found? And then I have a couple of specific questions. One is in relation to the planning department. I thought I heard that there was a five-year plan that would come back to you later in terms of some of the long-range planning priorities. But obviously one specific question that has long been on my mind is, are we assuming beginning a major effort with the conservation element update? And if so, could this budget as presently budgeted accommodate the suggestion I've been making of creating a biological resources advisory committee and a cultural resources advisory committee to match the effort of the water resources advisory committee and just ensure that we have the kind of expertise and community participation in conserving all of our resources? Then I hate to ask a question about a very big if, but given that there's a lot of public comment about affairs in Los Osos and a LAFCO meeting on the 15th, apparently there are those who wish to dissolve the community services district and essentially have the whole situation revert back to the county. The question then is, what assets and what liabilities would land in the county's lap in the event that the dissolvers get their way in Los Osos? And do we have any contingency plan or plan B or anything outlined for dealing with that possible eventuality? And obviously, I personally hope that eventuality doesn't eventuate, and I hope that this concern motivates those from the county who serve on LAFCO to be very much aware of protecting the county's interest in this. But I just wonder, we have to kind of look to possible emergencies, and there's been a lot of thought going into things like earthquakes and tsunamis, and I'm very, very appreciative. What kind of fiscal tsunami would hit the budget we think we have if the assets and liabilities and responsibilities for the whole Los Osos currently assumed by the LOSIS CSD were to land in the county's lap? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Some of the questions towards the budget, if you care to answer, Mr. Grant.
First, I'll show Eric. Thank you for reminding me of where to tell the public to look for the budget. I forgot my last slide, which I had it right here, and we'll bring that up. You can find the budget on the website, county's website, www.slocounty.ca.gov. It is there for your viewing. County libraries, county administrative office, and the auditor's office are all have budgets that can be reviewed there. In terms of the Los Osos issue, I'm going to kick it over to County Administrator David Edge.
Oh, thanks. Short answer to Eric's question is yes, we do spend a lot of time thinking about that. What if, as your board's aware, we have a staff team that's looking at what happens. We're not looking forward. We, as Eric said, we hope the eventuality doesn't eventuate. If it does, then clearly we need to be thinking about how we would handle that internally. And it's not clear yet, and may not be clear unless and until LAFCO takes its action and that progresses through the various legal steps it would have to progress to, what kind of liabilities and assets may end up on our doorstep. As your board knows, we are, in these kind of incidences, the provider of last resort, and so it's possible that if a dissolution went through that we would become the provider by default, and if that's the case, then we'll deal with it as we dealt with it prior to the creation of the CSD in 1998. So we're planning for that eventuality if it happens, but we're not taking a position either way on the issue. That's not a staff issue, and your board has indicated that it's not an item that you take position on. It's for LAFCO and the folk of Los Osos to work out. And obviously any action that we took would be intended to ensure that the exposure of the general county taxpayer under those circumstances was minimized to any liabilities that would accrue.
Thank you. With that, does anyone else from the public want to say comment on this item? Mr. Greening? Bring it back to the board for a motion.
I'll make a motion that we follow staff recommendation and set the hearing.
Okay.
Second.
Well, moved by Supervisor Ovett, seconded by Supervisor Lenthal. Roll call, please.
Mr. Ovett?
Aye.
Mr. Lenthal?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye. At this time, we're going to go on a short break, and we shall return at 10:40.
Water.
Yeah.
Water, you need some, Jim?
Ladies and gentlemen, we're back in session.
At this time, would Madam Clerk introduce hearing item C1, please?
Item C1 is a hearing to consider an appeal by Donald Carnine of the Subdivision Review Board, disapproval of his request for tentative parcel map CO050090 using the Transfer of Development Credits Program to subdivide an existing 40-acre parcel into two parcels of 20 acres each. The project is located at 4242 Los Tablas Willow Road, Willow Creek Road, approximately 3.5 miles west of the community of Templeton in the 1st District. This item was continued from April 4, 2006. The recommendation is to continue the hearing to September 12, 2006.
Staff, please.
Good morning, Chairperson and Board members. I am Nick Forster with the County Planning Department. County Planning staff requests that this item be continued to September 12th of 2006 in order to give staff and the applicant time to redesign the map to avoid any potential significant environmental impacts that may occur as a result of project approval.
And is Mr. Carnine here to address the...
Mr. Carnine's agent is agent present. Here.
Okay, we'll come to you in a minute. Anything else you would like to add at this time?
Our recommendation is that the item be continued to September 12th of 2006.
Okay. Would you please come forward? This is an appeal.
Toby Osgood, EMK and Associates in Paso Robles, and I represent the Carnine family and the Vieira family. And the location of this project actually has two addresses. The other address is on Niederer Road. And I have discussed this with my clients, and they're agreeable to discuss changes and try to reduce the impacts to agriculture. So we need some time to work on that.
So you're agreeable to the time
yes.
frame we have in front of us. Okay, thank you, ma'am. Does anyone from the public wishes to comment on this item? Seeing none, bring it back to board.
Mr. Chairman, I would move then to continue to September 12th.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Ovid, seconded by Supervisor Lentol. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? It's unanimous. Thank you. Thank you. Next item, please.
Next item is item C2. This is a hearing to consider a resolution vacating a temporary easement and offer of dedication for Quicksilver Way, a purported public road in the town of Templeton, 1st District. Recommendation is for approval and instruct the chairperson to sign.
Thank you. Mr. Smith.
And good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Board. I'm Tim Smith, your County Right-of-Way Agent. Before we proceed, I have a revised legal description that I've discussed with the clerk. Just for clarification purposes on the subject areas being discussed. The matter before you is really a clarifying issue or a housekeeping issue concerning extinguishing cloud of title over a parcel of property in Templeton, that being a temporary easement and for a turnaround and an offer to dedicate created by a tract map. It's not needed. Both encumbrances are not necessary for present or prospective public use. The County Planning Commission concurs and their request was consistent with the County General Plan as approved in the conformity report. The County Public Works Department and Planning support the vacation of this road as unnecessary for present or prospective public use. The required posting and publishing requirements were completed, and there was no objections received. A vacation of the subject portion of the road will not impair public or private access, will not affect existing traffic circulation. It's been impassable for public travel, and no public funds have been expended on that portion of the road. Further, that the vacation of the subject road is in the public interest and that the county will be extinguished from roadway interest and allow the consolidation of real property interest for the adjacent property owner. Department recommends adoption of the subject resolution before you. That concludes my report. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have, and the agent for the requesting party is available.
Thank you. At this time, I'll ask the board members if they have any. No. Does anyone from the public or a representative would like to say comment?
Toby Osgood from EMK and Associates in Paso Robles, and I represent Juan Lopez, and we are in complete agreement with Tim's report, and I hope that the map that was provided clarifies perfectly what's going on, and thank you very much for hearing this item.
Thank you. Anyone else? Seeing none, bring it back to the board for a...
Move to approve resolution vacating the easement. Second.
Moved by Supervisor Ovid, seconded by Supervisor Patterson. Roll call, please.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Lenthal?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye. Next item, please.
Next item is item C3. This is a hearing to consider an appeal of the Templeton Road improvement fee by D. Wasserman for a building permit to construct a winery facility on Elpamar Drive in the 1st District. Recommendation is for denial of the appeal.
Okay, at this time, Mr. Marshall.
Thank you, Supervisor Ashaji and members of the board. Richard Marshall, Department of Public Works. The item before you today involves the application for a building permit to construct a winery facility on Elpamar Drive within the Templeton Road Improvement Fee area. The associated fee is $51,390. The applicant, Mr. Wasserman, has filed an appeal of the fee. His letter is attached to the staff report. The points of appeal are summarized in the staff report with various responses provided. It is our recommendation that your board deny the appeal. Let me summarize for you a little bit of the history of the project. The application for building permit was first submitted in 2001 and accepted as a complete application in 2002. That time, the road improvement fee was just over $8,000. Various cycles of plan check on the building permit application have occurred. Most recently, plan check corrections were returned to the applicant last year, and those corrections have not yet been received back by the Planning and Building Department. As part of our standard process at your board's last update of the road improvement fees for this area, we sent a letter notifying this and all other applicants affected by the fee increase that the increase had been approved and there was time to pay the fee before it became effective. And in response to that notification, this applicant has filed this appeal. The permit is at this point not issued for construction, and that's its status. We recommend your board deny the appeal. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions to Mr. Marshall? Seeing none, you must be the...
I would
introduce. Give us your name for the record.
Well, my name's Donald Wasserman. I've been... Actually, something closer to 7 years I've been fooling around with this thing here and dealing with your department there. But they've allowed me to build part of the winery. And now they're saying, well, we can't let you finish the winery. We built a 7,000-square-foot underground wine cellar, concrete and steel. And then they've added this stuff on. They've said and numerous other things that I can't begin to tell you how much frustration that I've gone through with the planning department. And as far as the appeal for the road, first of all, they're not going to do anything to the road. They're not doing anything to my place outside. They're not putting anything in. Now, I can understand, let's say, a shopping center or something like that would necessarily mean more road or more access or more this or more that. But there's nothing going on there. I'm 8.5 miles from Templeton, downtown Templeton, where there possibly could be a road. And not only that, here I've got a project that's going to be worth over $1 million as far as cost, which would be assessed with property taxes and so on, which would reflect, more money or more income for the county. And on top of that, they say, hey, we want $40,000 and perhaps $51,000 now for street work. And I think it's absurd. I really think it's absurd. And I think that any one of you people, if you were building something and somebody said to you, hey, more money for streets or this or that and the other, where there is no street, there is no improvement. Why? What for? You know? And the only thing, I mean, I would say the building in itself would be an asset to the community because it is a Frank Lloyd Wright type design. A lot of stone, very, very well done. Would it be a beautiful project for the county, but if you people insist on not doing it, then all the thing I can do is just turn my back and say, okay, I'll forget about it. I won't build it. Or build something like out in, what is that town out there? In Shandon, where there's a whole winery, and it's all open. It's all, you know, just nothing. There's no building, no nothing. Hardly any building, I should say. And all open tanks and stuff like that. If that's what you want for your community, sure. But I think here you've got something that's good, that's an asset to the community. And dealing with this, I mean, I built apartment buildings in San Francisco, many apartment buildings, many commercial stuff, and I've never, and I might add San Mateo County, Marin County, and so on, and I've never had the frustration that I had from this, from your planning department.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Does anyone else from the public wishes to comment on this item? Seeing none, I'll give you a final word if you have something else to say, sir, before I close it to the public and bring it back to the board members.
Other than if I don't get it, I'm just going to walk. I'm not going to put any more money into it.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
I've got a question, Mr. Wasserman.
Okay. Before you leave, we have some questions from supervisors. Being in District 1, we'll start with Supervisor Ovid.
Thank you. What's not clear in this, you got your first actual permit in 2002, and what was that permit for?
I got to build the wine cellar. We built a 7,000 square foot underground wine cellar, concrete and steel, 16 foot.
I want to try to get to a point on this thing.
Yeah.
And so your next application was for what?
For the rest of the rest of the building. In other words, the reception area, the offices, the tank area.
Why was that not on the first application?
Well, that's what I'd like to know. They said at the time. Well, first of all, at that time when we filed that, we said we didn't have all the plans done. We just said that we had this part of it done, and so they said, well, fine. As soon as you get the plans done, Then come around and we'll give you the permit and we'll let you start building the rest. And they didn't. And at that time, they said no. That we've got to do other things. You know, you threw all this stuff at me. And it just so I mean, apparently when I bought the property, there was other houses on the property. Apparently, the guy didn't take out the permit for those houses when they were put in. So I had to legalize all those houses. I did all of that stuff. I did everything that the county wanted. And they kept throwing my plans out for all these little technical stuff that it just was absurd, absolutely absurd.
Anything else, Mr. Ovid?
No.
Supervisor Patterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Marshall, when... and I believe you referred to this in your presentation, that when the fees were approved by this board, you did notify applicants that had projects in the works, notifying them of the potential fee increase and allowing them to pay the old fee. I mean, they were noticed that they were going to go up at a date certain and they could pay the old fees prior to that date.
That's
correct.
Did
I hear you say that?
That's correct. We in the Public Works Department sent that notice. That's correct.
Okay, and Mr. Wasserman did receive that notice?
Yes, we send the all of such notices, return receipt requested, and we have the return receipt on file.
Okay. Then my question to Mr. Wasserman, why did you not respond to that at that time prior to the fees going up?
Supervisor Patterson, if I may, his response was to file this appeal.
I see. Yeah.
But what about if I have a question for this gentleman over here from the planning Department of Public Works? You're not with the Planning Commission, I assume. But when was this enacted? This assessment, this $40,000 street assessment, or $51,000? When was it enacted? Can you tell me that?
Well, it's annually every year.
Mr. Chairman, would you like me to respond? Usually, public addresses the board directly.
I recognize that, Mr. Marshall, but. On an annual basis, Mr. Robert, did you want to respond to that?
Or ask that these Mr. Marshall's fees are looked at annually every year, and they're adjusted every year. And
that decision is made by this board and not by staff. So,
yeah.
Well, at the time, the first time I filed, there were no fees. Now, as we're, in other words, that process.
When was it the first time you applied?
2002, well, it says a fee.
Well, prior to 2002 even, that we, when we built the wine cellar.
Supervisor Shaji and I can provide additional information on that.
Let me see if Mr. Obit is looking at something. If not, we'll come to you, Mr. Marshall.
The permit for the wine cellar was originally applied for in 1996.
There you go.
The fees were originally adopted by your board in 1992, but they covered a smaller geographic area at that time. I don't know, without doing a little research, whether this 1996 date was before the expansion of the geographic area. Another possibility is that we might have evaluated that the wine cellar itself was considered to not generate additional traffic and thus not subject to the fee. In either case, that permit was simply not subject to the fee, but the application for construction of a winery in 2002 is subject to the fee, which has been in place for quite a long time at that point.
Yeah, thank you for that explanation. Mr. Ovid, anything from you, sir?
No, it's just the confusion on this, and I noted it earlier and I didn't get to it, and I apologize, was what actually is happening and when it's what's going on. And
Mr. Wasserman, you may be seated, sir. There are no questions for you at this time.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, let me go to Supervisor Lentol and Supervisor Patterson, then we'll come back to Supervisor Ovid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I did have a question for
Mr. Wasserman. Okay, sir, if we may ask you to come back.
Thank you. I'm just looking at the staff report, sir, and it says that you started this, I believe, in May 24th of 2001, not the original, buying the property or the houses, getting those to be compliant with whatever procedure.
Yeah, in other words.
Let me ask a question first.
Sure.
So that was submitted in May of 2001. It says it was rejected because the plans were incomplete. And that's probably what you referred to as you wanted additional information or you had to get some design things taken care of, I assume.
Right.
Okay. And then you submitted the plans again, I believe, on January 15th, 2002. Okay, and then started the processing by Public Works in 2002. And I'd just like to say, well, what happened between February and 2002 now for the last 4 years? Because there was a letter sent to you in March of 2006, but I realize we've increased the fees three times during that time period because this is a four-year interval. So what happened from your perspective of you were working on these plans, you said, for 4 years and you couldn't get them done or you couldn't get agreement
with
the county?
Well, that and the architect took a year's vacation. He took a year's sabbatical. And
okay, so that's 1 year.
Yeah, plus, a year plus.
Okay.
And Hans Mager, the Mager family over there, they were very slow. They apparently we had sometimes I get a memory block, but we had the earthquake here and so on like that. And
so that was another year.
Yeah, Hans Mager had to do all kinds of work with retrofitting the earthquake, and so he could not work on my plans for me.
Okay.
And he was doing that for the county, and in consequence, I didn't mind because I wasn't in any particular rush. I would comment that I felt that in the beginning when we came to the Planning Commission and said, hey, we want to build a winery, and they said, but we don't have all the plans yet. We do have the plans for the wine cellar and so on. We were able to do that. And then they said it would be a simple matter when you went ahead, when you got the rest of the plans. And in consequence, when we got the regular plans, it wasn't a simple matter. And then they started loading all this stuff on top of us.
Let me ask one other question while you're there. You stated that you had to bring some other houses up to code.
Exactly. There was other property on the I bought the property originally from the.
Yeah, I know about where it's at. Yeah.
And there's a total of three houses, and apparently only the one house was done with a legal permit, and I bought it on a bank foreclosure from the bank and whoever the farm loan outfit is, and They didn't want to do anything. They didn't feel responsible for it. So we had it. We went and legalized them.
Let me try to shorten this thing down. What's when you put your permit in for the seller? Was that requirement made then to bring those up to date?
No, not at all.
Let me add the next question. Then when you came back with your other set of plans, was that when they recognized the other houses did not have?
Exactly. And then we had to go and legalize those before they even talked to us about the first set of plans.
When did you submit your plans, your final plans for the tasting room?
Final plans?
Yeah, well, the plans that you first submitted them. When did you submit for the tasting room?
We weren't going to build a tasting room there. There is really not much public access to the property because there is no tasting room. What it is we're producing wine and what we've done now is we've made wine and it goes to Switzerland in bulk.
What I'm trying to find out, what's the one structure you built was the cellar.
Yeah,
the wine. Okay, what's going on top of the cellar?
What's on top of the wine cellar?
Yeah.
Well, there's the patio area. There's the all the tankage for the water sprinklers. There's all in 3,000 gallon tanks that are set up for that.
And that was part of the second permit.
The second permit for the.
Well, see what you say in here is that you staff allowed you to go ahead and build a cellar.
Again, please.
Staff allowed you to go ahead and build a cellar on a permit.
Yes.
And then they told you to come back with the balance.
Yes.
And they would issue another permit.
Yes.
At what time did they begin that process for that second permit?
I would say it took us about a year to build the wine cellar.
So you're saying
somewhere around 96, I can't remember all the dates, but 98, somewhere in there, 99. And we attempted at that time, and they said, no, we can't. We can't do that because you've got to legalize these houses. So then we had to file plans on every one of the darn houses and legalize them.
And that started in 2002?
Oh, no, it started before that.
I mean, when you had to legalize those houses?
No, before that.
Mr. Owitt, Mr. Luntle wasn't done with his question.
That's fine. I'm just trying to find the time frame in here.
Can I go back to him? And
thank you, Mr. Chair. And that's kind of what I was trying to do with the picture of the time frame because in your opening comments, you made reference to staff and Mr. Marshall of the county.
I assumed he was from the Planning Commission, but I didn't realize it was from the Department of Public Works. Yeah.
Let me finish, and I'll be glad to listen to you. But when we both talk, it's real counterproductive.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So I heard you say that one of your concerns was the delays caused by the county and the county staff,
mm-hmm.
and that the county was responsible for some of these increase in fees. And I just want to make, I guess, a clear picture in my mind, and hopefully in yours if I can, that over this three-year period, there were ongoing cost increase. This was literally a work in progress. But it sounds to me like what you're saying is some of the delays were caused because your architect was on vacation, the engineer was busy doing work because of the earthquake and things like that. So the delays were really more on your part than on the county's part because there was a gap from when you first dropped plans off to when you came back from either notice of correction.
I agree in that sense. There's certainly a gap, but I mean, but if in the case that the county would have been honest with me to start with, when I first filed the permit 96 for the wine cellar, which was part of the winery, and it's very obvious when you go out there and look at the site that it was all part of the design, that they should have said to me, well, you're going to have to get a whole new permit for the rest of it. You're going to have to do this. You're going to have to do that. But they inferred to me that the wine cellar. It would be a simple matter that I could just do it with the permit that's already out on the wine cellar. And so it goes clear back to 96.
Mr. Wasserman, I think we heard that part. Were you done with your question?
I was just going to say,
let's see.
It seems to me, though, that, and you have experience because you said you built in San Francisco and Marin County and I believe San Mateo County, but understanding the government process, if the permit or if the application or if the architectural and engineering work is not complete, are you saying that you've done that before and the other counties have let you go ahead? Or are you just saying that you had more problems here in this county and because it sounds to me any governmental agency, if you don't have complete plans, I don't know how they can approve and sign something off. If you don't have an architect that's working for you on a timely basis because they're on vacation or an engineer that's doing other things like that, it's going to delay a project. And also, unfortunately, as any time in the last 5 or 10 years, construction costs of things have gone up, as well as our cost of doing business, and that's why we have periodic reviews and increase every year in the fees. So I'm not hearing you make the case from my perspective that it was the county that caused these delays or caused you the increased fees. And that's
well, I would say that actually a good part of it was where they keep saying, well, we got a new requirement in your plans. We've got to make you... In other words, like when I filed for the wine cellar, they didn't say anything about the other houses. They didn't say that they had to be legalized and things like that. And then they just kept coming in with things. And I would say that at least 75% of it was due to additional things that the county wanted me to do since 96. And I would say 25% was probably due to architect taking a vacation and the engineer because of the earthquakes and so on like that. But I feel the county is responsible.
Well, my last question is, I don't know about 96 because it says here in the staff report that you first submitted your plans in 2001 and they were incomplete and came back from 2002. So from my perspective, the clock is starting here in the end of 2001 or the beginning of 2002.
Yeah, but I mean, he just explained to you that we started in 96 with the plans for the wine cellar and all that.
Thank you, Mr. Wasserman.
Appreciate
you being here. Mr. Robert, would you want to take a shot at this?
I need to ask Mr. Marshall some questions. The calculation for the fee is based on what? What square footage?
The fees are, the number of square feet? I don't think.
No, not the numbers per square
feet. We take the square footage of the proposed structures and multiply by the trip generation rate, which
is... But what square footage are we talking about? The full 7,000 for the basement, or is this the new structure?
The fee for this permit is based on the number of square feet that this permit covers. So the wine cellar was a separate permit earlier, so it's not included.
Okay. And this was put on, and the application for this was 2002.
And the applicant would have originally received notification of this fee in July of 2002, the first time they picked up these plans for correction.
And to my assessment by reading staff's report, this was after his architect went on vacation, when he put this application in.
As I understand from the testimony, yes.
The issue I'm having with this one is that he had requirements to bring things up to grade, which delayed issuing the permit. And I can't ascertain as to how long that took to bring those other houses up to grade. How long? Mr. Wasserman, you have to come to the microphone.
About a year and a half. We had to draw plans for each one of the houses. We had to have the engineer.
I understand the process. You say about a year and a half. Did you get those houses permitted within that year and a half?
Yeah, we got them permitted and legalized, yes.
Okay. So what I'm saying is during that time period, you had no control of being able to finalize permit. It's going to be 2004. What I'm going to do, and I'm going to say this to now, I'm going to base this on the fact that I think that we can partially deny the appeal and that he be charged the Templeton circulation fee based on the year 1994. Or
2004, yeah.
Or whatever.
I like what you said the first time.
I have that same problem you, Harley. I don't have as much gray hair. That the fee be assessed on the year 2004.
Okay, let me get a second and go under discussion to Supervisor Patterson. Moved by Supervisor Robert, seconded by Supervisor Lentil. Okay, and the question is withdrawn.
Okay, the finding is that I think that it's complicated, but actually what I just did is give him 2 years credit primarily because 2 years of that time period of that permit were tied up in things that were not under his control, like bringing up those houses, other houses under that. And I'm assured that fee is still going to be somewhere in a 20,000 frame, but it's not...
I can probably live with that, but, darn it, 51,000.
Okay. We're done. We have a motion and a second. Thank you, Mr. Wasserman.
Thank you.
Okay, with that, a voice call, please. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed? Thank you.
With that, next item in front of us is closed session. Does anyone from the public wishes to comment on closed session items that listed? Seeing none, I bring it back to Mr. Lindholm.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The board is going to meet in closed session on the items which are listed on the agenda.
Okay.
And 20 minutes, yes.
Okay. Yeah. With that, we shall...
No, it's going to take longer than 20 minutes.
We shall move to closed session and return to the public at 2 p.m.
Are we going upstairs or
upstairs?
When Don Peters is going to take longer than 20 minutes. See you later.
And that is May 23rd. And if Madam Clerk will introduce the first hearing item, but before we go to that, we need to hear from our counselor. From closed session. I don't know if we need the other counsel to report from the other closed session.
No, I think I can take care of both.
Okay.
Okay, the board met in closed session this morning on the items which were listed on the agenda and met for a little over 20 minutes and took no action on any item, no final action on any item in the closed session agenda. Therefore, no public report is required, and that's today's public report. Thank you.
Thank you for that great report, Mr. Lindholm. With that, Madam Clerk.
The next item on your agenda is a hearing to consider a resolution certifying the San Luis Obispo County Regional Airport Master Plan Update and Final Environmental Assessment and Environmental Impact Report. This is an all districts recommend approval and instruct the chairperson to sign. And I would just remind you, we read two amendments into the record this morning for this item.
Thank you. Ms. Klesha.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. We're here today for you to certify the environmental document and adopt the airport master plan as two separate resolutions. There's a couple of people I'd like to introduce. Martin Pell, who's going to help me with the PowerPoint presentation, and Bill Robeson, representing the Planning and Environmental Division of the county. I'm sorry. My name is Klesha Nairn. I'm the county airports manager. Thank you. Also with us today are Jim Harris of Kaufman Associates, their company, their firm, developed the airport master plan, and David Full of Environmental Science Associates, who wrote the environmental document for us. So that being said, we'll move forward. There were five principal objectives in the airport master plan, and that was to continue to provide aviation services at the airport that meet the present and future air transportation needs of the residents and the business community, to support and contribute to the economic well-being of San Luis Obispo County by facilitating tourism, business travel, and air cargo movement, to develop a land use and facility plan that designates the most efficient and productive aviation-related use of all airport property in conformance with all applicable FAA standards, to identify a phased program or specific airfield and landside facility improvements to accommodate, to the extent reasonable and feasible, current and future demand for commercial services, and finally, and very importantly, to balance future development of the airport with the protection of the environment. What I'm going to do present to you now are the various phases of the environmental document and the improvements that we've requested for the airport. On January 25th of 2005, your board accepted the airport master plan concept and directed staff to commence the environmental process. As part of that process, the following project components were examined. In phase one, which represents the years 2005 to 2010, the following airfield facilities are recommended for development. Construction, and these will be pointed out to Martin, so it should show up on your screen. Construct runway 11 EMAS. EMAS is Engineered Material Arresting System. It serves for the runway safety area for the airport off the end of the runways. It's a way for us to not use or have as much property or required property for overruns of the runway. It was just recently certified by the FAA, so it makes it a really great thing for San Luis because we are sort of property poor. Construct runway 29 EMAS on the other end. Extend runway 11 by 800 feet for a total of 6,100 feet. We currently have 5,300. Extend and connect parallel taxiway A, Alpha, by 800 feet. Develop a perimeter service road around the extended end of runway 11. That's for our service vehicles and for emergency response. It's a requirement of our Part 139 certification. Repaint the runway markings and install and improve runway lighting systems. Also in Phase 1, the following aviation support facilities. Property acquisition. Three properties are involved. The Philbin parcel, CB&I, which is right next door. And at this first phase, it would just be a small piece of that. And Say's Pure Gas. Again, just a small piece. Runway safety area grading. Grade of fill material for the runway extension. Construction of drainage improvements. Other improvements in support of the runway 11 extension, such as the realignment of Santa Fe Road and a drainage swale for flood control improvements. In phase two of the program, from 2011 to 2023, the following airfield facilities were examined. Relocate the navigational aids, the glide slope indicator, and the visual approach slope indicator. Extend and connect parallel taxiway M, Mike, by 800 feet. Relocate the perimeter service road adjacent to taxiway Mike. Extend runway 7 by 500 feet for a total of 3,000 feet. I just wanted to remind you that on your board's agenda this morning, you had a consent item for the airfield improvements and the realignment of some taxiways, and we're moving the threshold of runway 25. That would shorten the runway, and now this project would bring it back up to 3,000 feet. So it's actually more like a shifting on the runway rather than a true total extension. Extend taxiway J, Juliet, by 500 feet. Extend the approach lighting system and construct an access road to the approach lighting system. Aviation support facilities relative to this project. Grade for the relocated glide slope indicator. Demolish existing improvement structures in preparation for new airport-related development. Grade for hangar development. Construct a west side hangar development. Conduct a siting study for the air traffic control tower relocation. And if you've been out to the airport, you know where the tower is. It's located right in the middle of the ramp. We would really like to get that moved and take full advantage of the ramp facilities. And as a result of the siting study, then relocate the air traffic control tower. In examining all those issues, we went through the entire process of looking at all the environmental impacts. There were eight issues to be that were determined to be significant but mitigable to a level of insignificance. And these are socioeconomic impacts, transportation in the Phase 2 program, intersection congestion, and that's primarily at Airport Drive. That's the southerly entrance and exit from the airport located near the fire station. The mitigation would be signalization at that intersection. Air quality, phase one, construction-related emissions. We're going to have to move a lot of dirt and transport a lot of dirt, so there's requirements for the equipment as well as dust control, et cetera. And the mitigation would be compliance with all the San Luis Obispo County APCD requirements. Water quality, phase one, construction-related erosion. We have to do some grading and create that flood control improvement at the near Santa Fe Road. And we need to be in compliance with the Stormwater Prevention Pollution Plan and the National Pollution Discharge Elimination System, and we have to have all the permits for those. Cultural resources, Phase 1 and Phase 2. During construction periods, that we ensure that there is a monitoring by an archaeologist. Thank you. Endangered and threatened species, Phase 1 and Phase 2. The mitigation would be to ensure that we do all the construction within the window that's prescribed by U.S. Fish and Wildlife and by the Corps, and that we would monitor all of that construction with a biologist and a botanist, and obviously obtain all the appropriate permits. Wetlands, Phase 1, construction, mitigation. We will enter into a contract, as we did previously, with the Land Conservancy to ensure that what we remove from the wetlands, that we recapture that in another location that's at least 10,000 feet? 10,000 feet from the end of the active runway. And where we did the last enhancement program was over on what was formerly known as the Filippone parcel, that's located near Highway 101. Hazardous material and solid waste, Phase 1 and Phase 2, the mitigation would be to ensure that we practice due diligence. And under CEQA 2, we also have to measure the cumulative impacts. Air quality, Phase 1 construction, again, we have to comply with APCD. Endangered and threatened species, ensure that we work at the proper construction window and that we again monitor with a biologist and a botanist and achieve all the appropriate permits. There were two environmental impacts that were identified as significant but unavoidable. They are air quality, Phase 2 operational related emissions. This deals with vehicular traffic, not aircraft movement, but vehicular traffic as it goes to and from the airport. And cumulative impacts, transportation, traffic congestion, again the signalization, and air quality, again Phase 2 vehicular traffic. As required by CEQA, a statement of overriding considerations has been prepared. By the way, these environmental impacts that we've identified as being significant would be there whether we did this project or not. The airport will continue to be used as an airport facility. So there still would be those impacts regardless of the project. Overriding considerations for significant impacts. The master plan as a whole, social and economic benefits, would allow the county airport, as the only air carrier airport in the county, to meet existing and future air transportation needs of the community. As these impacts relate directly to the extension of runway 1129, it would improve passenger convenience and reliability of the regularly scheduled air carrier service at San Luis Obispo. It would reduce the likelihood of air carrier operations that would operate with late weight limitations or weight restrictions, taking people off of airplanes when the weather's too warm, etc. Reduce the number of instances when passengers are actually denied boarding to comply with those weight restrictions. And that happens now. If America West, with the regional jet, departs here, they have 50 people booked for the flight, and the temperature outside is 85 degrees, they will take off 5 people and their luggage. So, and that is an economic impact to the airline as well as to the airport. Allow for new carrier destinations, including Sacramento, currently not offered due to weight restrictions. I know that that's a highly desirable destination, doing my best. As part of the overriding considerations, we'd like you to also assess or take into consideration the daily economic benefit of the airport to the county. And these numbers are 2003. That's when the study, the economic benefit study, was done as part of the master plan. And with this environmental process, you know kind of how long it takes. So these numbers are a little bit dated, but it will give you a fairly good idea of really what the airport means to the community in dollars and cents. Daily, $389,000 in revenues. There are 1,541 local jobs supported by the airport. That's not directly at the airport, but indirectly, those service providers, et cetera. And they bring home paychecks of $105,000 a day. I wish, well, no comment. 588 air visitors and $54,000 in visitor spending. The annual benefit, again, to 2003, represents $142 million in revenue, $38.3 million in payroll earned on an annual basis. Those numbers projected for the year 2008 and making an assumption that we would have 117,550 annual aircraft operations in operation as a landing and a takeoff, the revenues would be $148 million, with earnings of $40.5 million and 1,630 jobs supported. So just in that short period of time, about another 100 employees as a result of the airport. Again, as I stated before, alternatives to this plan, as documented in the Environmental Impact Report, the significant unavoidable adverse impacts of the proposed project also occur under the no-action alternative. Therefore, whether or not the master plan is approved and implemented, the significant air quality and traffic impacts would occur. Therefore, it is recommended that the Board of Supervisors adopt the resolution certifying the final environmental impact report for the San Luis Obispo County Regional Airport master plan update and adopt the resolution of the final master plan for the San Luis Obispo County Regional Airport. By adopting or certifying the resolution, the County Airport Master Plan final EA/EIR has been completed in compliance with CEQA. The master plan was presented to the decision-making body, master plan final EA/EIR, it's easy for someone else to say, was presented to the decision-making body of the lead agency, the county, and that the decision-making body reviewed and considered the information contained in the final EA/EIR prior to approving the project, and that the County Airport Master Plan final EA/EIR reflects the lead agency's independent judgment and analysis. And as further stated in the resolutions, then the board would adopt the CEQA-required findings, the statement of overriding considerations as attached to the resolution, and certifies the environmental impact report for San Luis Obispo County Regional Airport. There is a separate resolution for you to adopt the final master plan project. Thank you very much, and I could entertain any questions.
Probably for those who are listening, we'll tell them what EA/EIR stands for.
Environmental Assessment, Environmental Impact Report. This is a joint document. It represents the federal requirements, the NEPA requirements. That's the environmental assessment part. And the EA/EIR portion, which is the CEQA document. It is a joint document, and that's how this is developed.
Thank you. Any questions from supervisors? Seeing none, I'll go to the public at this time, and our first request to speak is William, is it Worksmiller? Please come forward, give us your name for the record.
Okay. My name is William Worksmiller, and Mr. Chairperson, members of the board, appreciate the opportunity to speak this afternoon. I'm the owner of ACI and the San Luis Jet Center out at the airport. We are an FBO, which means to say we're a fuel service and ground support provider for aircraft at the airport, including both the airlines as well as private aircraft. Second to American Eagle's maintenance facility, we're the second largest employer at the airport, and we are here to speak in support of the proposed master plan update and environmental impact report. I think it's in the county's best interest to approve this item since it's going to bring significant benefits to the airport as well as the surrounding community. It's going to allow the airport to service the same number of passengers with fewer flights through the use of regional jets, which will also help to keep ticket costs low and make air transportation available to more members in the community. Another reason that this is important, and certainly not an overriding consideration, but regional jets, as well as all turbojet aircraft, have a statistical history of being considerably safer than turboprop aircraft. And as I'm sure many of you know, there's a lot of people who will not ride on aircraft with propellers on them because it simply makes them feel uncomfortable. Certainly not to say that either mode of transportation is unsafe. A ride in any airplane at the airport is probably safer than everybody's drive home from this meeting this afternoon, but it would certainly be an advantage to allow all the air carriers, United, American, and United Express, to provide regional jet service, thus increasing the level of safety available to the people in the community here. Another overriding reason that I think it's important to approve this item is that it just simply makes use of an existing resource. We're not asking to build a new airport or construct anything new. We just want to maximize and best use an asset and a resource that's already there. Finally, I think the biggest reason to approve this is that there are really no negative consequences to this proposal. The Federal Aviation Administration provides 90 to 95% of the funding, so this is a huge opportunity for the county to get a huge improvement to its airport at little or no cost to the county. I shouldn't say no cost. There's certainly some expense associated with it. And according to the environmental impact report that was recently completed, there are no environmental items that cannot be mitigated to acceptable levels, and the cost-benefit analysis is also favorable. And I think that's it.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Anyone else wishes to comment on this item? Seeing none, bring it back to the board for either a comment or a motion. Mr. Lentol, it being in your territory.
Nobody has any comments. I'm ready to go forward. I didn't
please.
See
anybody. I can comment.
Go ahead, Harry. Make a comment.
No, I'll comment.
He thinks it's a great project. Okay, Mr. Patterson?
Well, I just want to thank Clausian planning staff and the consultants for doing an excellent job. I know it's been a long time coming, and Clausian mentioned earlier today that this is the hardest part of the project, and once we get through this, building the airport will be a breeze. And
we all,
Clausian.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Thank you. I also want to thank Clausian and add a few more. This has really been a team effort. We have General Services, we have the FAA, we have Planning, we have County Council. There are a lot of players here, and I can think of all the times when you say the government was too bureaucratic or there were too many layers of government. This is a situation where Clausian, through her leadership and tenacity, brought all these players together, and I, too, want to commend you for the great job, because I think this is the first stage and the most important in the future process. And with that, I'm prepared to make a motion.
You can always call the runway after her.
Mr. Chairman, just to make note, you were handed two new resolutions that were presented today, so they're different than the ones were in the packet.
So I'm prepared to make two motions.
Right. Or one include them all, yeah.
No.
First motion.
Okay. Thank you,
because I don't to approve the resolution to certify the final EIR on the final master plan for the San Luis Obispo County Regional Airport, ED05-404.
I'll second.
Motion by Supervisor Lentol, seconded by Supervisor Patterson. A roll call, please.
Mr. Lentol?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Ovent?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye. Next motion.
And my second motion to approve the resolution to adopt the final master plan for the San Luis Obispo County Regional Airport.
I'll second.
Motion by Supervisor Lentol, seconded by Supervisor Patterson. A roll call, please.
Mr. Lentol?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye. Did we have to waive the reading of the resolution?
No.
Okay, thank you, and thank you for a job well done.
Mr. Lai, would you give Clausian a hug for me?
Okay, next item, please.
Next item on your agenda is item C5. This is a hearing to consider adoption of resolutions to take final action on all the amendments tentatively recommended for approval on May 9th, 16th, 23rd, and 2006. Amendments to the Land Use Element South County Area Plan, Title 19 Building and Construction Ordinance, Title 22 Land Use Ordinance, and Title 26 Growth Management Ordinance, Summer General Plan Amendment Cycle 2006, Recommendation is for approval and instruct chairperson to sign. And remind you that there was an amendment this morning, and it looks like there's more.
Thank you, and thank you for your reminder. Would it be Ms. Murray or Ms. Griffin?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Cami Griffin, County Planning. Just a few housekeeping notes. There were some replacement pages that were already distributed to you. As the clerk noted, they reflect your action of last Tuesday on the growth management ordinance. The findings that are being handed out to you today, they're labeled as Exhibit D. They were inadvertently left off or not attached to the resolution, and you've already reviewed those previously on May 9th. Also, part of your direction of May 9th included modification of the supplemental water fee program language to include some direction on the Woodlands Village area, and that language is hot off the press and is also included. It's a replacement of pages C-512 through C-515. I have discussed this with the Woodlands representative, Mr. Bornholt. He did write a letter to the board, and he is in agreement, I believe, with this current proposed language. And with that, your board has two actions to take today. The first is whether to adopt or not adopt the resolution on the carryover for the growth management ordinance. And the second would be adoption of the resolution and ordinances that would amend the growth management ordinance as well as titles 22, 19, and add the program to the South County Area Plan. And that would conclude staff's comments.
Questions from board members? Seeing none, we'll go to the public. At this time, Mr. Verheilich, followed by Mr. Bunin.
Good afternoon, Chairman Cacho, members of the board, staff. I am Larry Verheilich. I'm the current president of the Napomo Community Services District Board of Directors. Here today to speak in support of the changes to Title 19 and 22 in the South County Area Plan regarding the supplemental water and development of the supplemental water in lieu fee. This was outlined in our letter to Mr. John Hand and the Board of Supervisors of our letter dated April 27th of this year. NCSD feels that these changes will be for all new development within the Napomo Mesa Water Conservation Area. It's going to level the playing field. All the rules and regulations are known, and it does apply to all. So for us, we feel that this is good. We will have a involvement in setting the in-lieu fee, which we will hopefully get, I won't say hopefully. At this time, at our meeting tomorrow, we will be contracting with the firm to do a pre-design design study so we can get a better feel for what the costs are going to be. I realize they've been in the paper anywhere from $2 million to $10 million. Let's say that the bottom number was sort of one of those wild, you know what, guesses. And we feel the upper number is probably somewhere in the neighborhood, hopefully below that. But once we get a better handle on it, then we can determine that in lieu fee. And with that said, I'll conclude my comments in support of the changes before you.
Thank you
very much.
Mr. Bunin, followed by Mr. Verheilich, before you go, we have a question by Supervisor Patterson.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Verheilich,
yes.
Do you have an idea of how long we're talking about for the project at all? Any estimates?
We're hoping to be about midway through construction by December of 2007, with probably completion of construction end of spring, early summer. Assuming the EIR is certified this fall, not too many people hit us with lawsuits and whatnot on the EIR, which would delay the start of the project, so on and so forth.
Okay, so if it starts in the spring of 2007, or you said mm-hmm. about halfway through, and then completion when?
About late spring, early summer, 2008.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome. Any other questions?
I don't see any other requests. Thank you, Mr. Vrijelic. Mr. Bunin, followed by Ken Bornholt.
Jerry Bunin, Government Affairs Director, Home Builders Association. I really hope that you're going to adopt the recommended procedural changes I gave you last week so that in the future we combine growth management and resource management earlier in the process so it's not done under deadline. We still oppose parts of what's before you today. We still think it's a mistake to have different sets of growth management standards depending on which side of 101 you're on. We think everyone should be treated the same. We think that's fair. We also believe that a one-year solution to this is probably a mistake in terms of overall planning if you want to encourage multifamily mixed-use development in the Pomo, because anyone who isn't on this list now doesn't know any idea what's going to happen to them in the future. On the resource management part of this, we would still like to see the growth management ordinances be allowed to be approved with the condition of approval that they have to have wet water before they can get a building permit, so there'd be water, supplemental water available, and that no subdivision maps could be recorded until that wet water was available. So they could complete the process, but they couldn't do any kind of construction whatsoever until there was water available. The last thing, it goes back to the comment about having different standards between the West and the East of TEFT. Government has a tendency to look at home builders as if we're a cash cow. I really think that government's really going to need to start thinking that we're returning to a normal housing market. We're willing to help you fix existing traffic problems, which the law says we really don't have to do, but we're going to have to get some kind of a reimbursement agreement or some kind of a development agreement, because the world of housing finances says that the banker expects to get reimbursed from the money he's giving us. So I just think that what you've done today is attempt to think that we're going to help you fix traffic problems, and I think that what you might find out is that we can't do that because the banker isn't going to buy into it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Bornholt, followed by Jesse Hill.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, my name is Ken Bornholt, and I'm appearing today on behalf of the Woodlands Project. I read the language that staff handed me just prior to this hearing, and I think that it basically goes back to my original proposal under my letter to your board dated May 8th, and I think it meets the intent that we were trying to achieve with all the suggestions we made. And just for the record, I'm offering into the record a copy of my letter to your board dated May 19, 2006, which I understand most if not all of you have already received. Given this language and my conversation with planning staff that it's the functional equivalent of what we were requesting, we're satisfied with it, and we would therefore support the new language that was just handed to you today. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Hill, followed by Esther Holliday.
Jesse Hill, if I may, a few handouts.
Please.
Thank you, Jesse Hill, resident of Napomo. I represented 50 people in the water litigation, and I want to stand up on their behalf for a couple of issues. What you have before you is the water management area that you're looking at. Napomo is sort of that little blurb to the right, and this was prepared by the NCSD's hydrologist who testified at the Santa Maria Groundwater Basin trial. These are part of his exhibits prepared by Richard Watson and Gershom. And so that's the management area that we're talking about. And what I think is somewhat unfair, if you look at the next figure in this, these are the plots of all the groundwater areas and wells that were done throughout the groundwater litigation. And the importance of this, at least to me, is that for the wells that are south of the fault, and in this case what we're talking about is the Santa Maria River fault, Those wells, when you look at that from 75, and this is all the wells that were done in the Napomo Mesa that were presented in the groundwater litigation, those wells south of the fault are at levels that are higher than the area has and are normal for their elevation from 75 through the year 2000. And then if you look at the next page, this is the direct model output that was presented in the groundwater litigation. And the only time it actually converged was in the 40s and in the year 2000. And this is for the whole basin, and the yellow is the mesa. And then lastly, the last little exhibit there is the hydrologic area boundaries that were from the DWR for the Southern District in 1979. And the point of all this is that what you're doing is you're going to be charging the folks that are on the south side of the Santa Maria River fault for water that it's highly unlikely that they're going to receive much benefit for, because there's sufficient water in that basin and the water wells are fairly high south of the Santa Maria fault. So my sense is that it would be better to get some staff down and start to work with the area to try to figure out who's going to benefit, because you do need a benefit when you do what we're calling an AB 1600 plan, to have a nexus. And what you're talking about is charging them for additional water, and some of them simply can't use it. And it's going to be going, well, I'm out of time. Thank you.
Sorry. Ms. Holliday, followed by Ed Eby.
Hello, board members. Istar Holliday, an elected member of SCAC. We have given our approval to the growth management ordinance as it has been amended, and I understand that it has a life of 1 year. And I'm here to ask you to pay close attention to two aspects of this so-called smart growth. One of them is the push for more mixed-use residences. As a native New Yorker, I'm only too familiar with living over the store. And there are things that we need to consider when pushing mixed-use residences for communities such as we have here in the Central Coast: the lack of a mass transit system, the lack of sufficient parking, and the danger to underlying businesses from a stopped-up toilet or an overflowing bathtub. These are things that need to be carefully considered and monitored for this next year before the push for mixed-use residences are extended for any length of time. The other aspect of the ordinance that I think needs close attention in this next year is that laughable comment that new development is needed in order to improve the traffic impacts of new development. I have been here 25 years, and I have yet to see any development actually mitigate the impact of the development itself, let alone improve any existing problems in the community. This is a push we have been asking for, that improvement to the infrastructure be made before the developments are approved, and it has not actually happened. So I would ask you to please look at that preferential treatment and think through what the history of development has been in terms of its impact on the community and especially on the infrastructure. Our experience has been that outside of the internal traffic flow, there has been little concern for the impact of the outflow from these developments on the arteries that have served the community in which they're placed. So with that, I will end my presentation. Thank you.
So Eby?
Yes, I'm Ed Eby. I'm the 2006-2007 chairman of the South County Advisory Council, here to speak on the growth management ordinance. I'd like to say that I think this is about as good as we're going to get for this year. This is a one-year amendment to the ordinance, and we will be revisiting it next year. We'll be doing a one-year experiment to see if we can vitalize the Old Town Napomo plan, and I hope we can do that with the relief that we've given to the growth cap of some residences there. And I also hope that we can see some results from the traffic improvements that this temporary growth cap will allow. Like I say, I hope we can revisit this next year and see how well we've been doing. One of the key tenets of the increase above the growth cap is something called smart growth. And we haven't seen a lot of that we can point to and say it's been successful. There's one development that's almost sold, completely sold out right now on Oak Glen that is along the lines of smart build. It's very small residences on very small parcels. It's meant to, as smart growth, it's meant to be for people who work near where they live. Unfortunately, that doesn't seem to be how it's selling, because the advertisements in the newspapers right now for this project are that it's affordable housing, $400,000 to $500,000, and easy commuting distance to San Luis Obispo and Santa Maria. So obviously, they don't feel that the people that are going to buy those houses are going to work in Napomo. And that's one of the key tenets of smart growth, is you live near where you work. If you buy a place with the expectation you're going to buy, go to work 30 miles in one direction or 20 miles in the other direction, that doesn't meet what we hope that smart growth would meet. So, as I mentioned, we're going to revisit this again next year like we do every year, and I hope we can revisit all of these projects that we've let through under the relieved growth cap and see what successes we've had and see how we need to modify it then. Thank you.
Thank you. That was my last request to speak. Does anyone else would like to make a comment on this item? Seeing none, close it to the public at this time. Bring it back to the board, either a comment or a motion. Mr. Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to echo the sentiments of many of the people that spoke here in public comment that this is a one-year experiment, if you will. We have some special conditions that we've been grappling with in Napomo for years, and we're making an attempt to address them. And I, like you, am very interested in revisiting this in a year and seeing if these treatments actually resolve any of the issues or launching us on a course that will bring resolution to some of the problems there. And I'll be looking at it very closely. And I hope we don't wait a year, really, to continue the process of talking about how we can meet our resource demands and our infrastructure demands without having development that actually exacerbates the problems before we address them. And I know this board is committed to trying to find solutions. We have problems. We have needs in the community for housing and for economic growth. We need to try to balance all of those things. And I want to work very hard during the course of the next year to continue this effort to find some real meaningful solutions. I want to thank staff for their efforts. You know, this is round three with this particular ordinance, and it's been a challenge, and I'm hoping that we can learn something from it and move forward. So I'm certainly going to support it. With that, I'll make a motion to adopt staff's recommendation.
That's the two resolutions and the four ordinances, then?
Yes.
Okay.
As presented.
And waive the reading, right.
And waive the reading.
Okay, moved by Supervisor Patterson and seconded by Supervisor Ovid. I have two lights. Mr. Lentol, did you want to?
Okay. Supervisor Patterson, BB to it. If there's no more comments, I was going to make the motion. So.
Okay, with that, a roll call, please.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Lentol?
Aye.
Mr. Ashaji?
Aye.
With that, we'll adjourn this meeting. Want to pass this to the clerk, please?
Have a good Memorial Day weekend.
Thank you. Cammy, I tried calling.
What are you
going to
do?
I don't know.
I'm jealous. I'm getting really. Oh. Absolutely.
You should probably ask upstairs.
Just cut that.
Thank you.
That's that European thing.
Oh, is that it?
I know what you.
Microphone.